call to order the Pacific City Joint Water and Sanitary Authority Board of Directors special meeting. We are meeting March 11th, 2021 at 3 p.m. via video conference call. I'll call the roll. Ann Price, here. Don Carlton. I can see you, Sean, but I can't hear you. Okay. Tom Donahue?
Here.
Thank you. And for the record, Cameron Gogas isn't quite with us yet. Just in a general announcement to clarify, our authority manager did give his resignation last week, and upon mutual agreement, his last day was Monday, and all employee and HR issues have been taken care of. Item three on the agenda is an update from staff. We have two items for which there would have been authority manager input for which we want to check in with the board. And so with regards to item 3A, the AMR project, Michelle's going to give us an update on that, the status of the contract. That's a project that has both responsibility and operations and also in the office with the contract. And Michelle is working with the operator to continue on with that contract. So Michelle, the floor is yours.
Thank you. PCJWSA is waiting for about 700 lids to be delivered for installation by the contractor. We talked to Consolidated this morning. They said that those lids would be here on the 22nd of this month. The reason that the lids had to be replaced is because we're using a radio system. The lids we were using were metal because they were traffic rated, and we are purchasing traffic rated plastic ones so that we can read them. That's one issue that myself and staff are working on to get the contractor back down here to install those correctly with the little antennas all set up. PCJ was informed that the new meter system would work with Springbrook software when it was first purchased. However, it was never verified that it would work with the version of Springbrook that we currently have. It will not. Fortunately for us, we'd already asked for an upgrade to Springbrook, and the new software will work with it. We have a timing issue. We'd like to test those meters this month for the first time. It's going to be touch and go whether Springbrook will be up with their testing software for the first few weeks and we can use it or not. So we're playing tag with everybody, trying to get it loaded so we can test it with the new meters and get their software on board next week. So at least we can test it this month, but we may not be able to do the whole read for all 700 or 1,100 of them. The last issue with the AMR project is when the contractor was here, they were having some troubles with the locks that were on the meters. Some were full of sand, some they didn't take the time to clean them out, and after hearsay, given permission to cut them, they cut all the locks off. So we would have to replace all of the locks that were cut off during the installation, and it would be about $11,000. And we'd like to know if we should proceed with that and go keep the lock system. Our authority manager at the time did not believe in the lock system, so it wasn't a big concern. So this is an issue for the board.
Okay, let me, if I can verify, let's start with number one with regards to the lids. Is that the last installation piece we have with the contractor?
Yes, to my knowledge, unless there's some that were left off. Or we found two yesterday that were just sitting on the ground at a couple of meter boxes but that were not installed. I doubt that we would call them down for those little things, but yes, this would be the last.
And when you say two things we found, were those just lids off or were the meters not installed?
Two brand new meters not installed.
Yes, Tom? Sorry, I was moving on.
As far as procedure is concerned, the locks that you're talking about, in the past, do we take the lock off to read the meter, or is it, what's the lock for?
It's to lock the meter on or lock the meter off, so that the customer did not have the availability to use the meter as a personal shut-off.
Gotcha. So they cut all the locks off?
Pretty much.
On how many meters?
We're not positive, but it could be up to 1,000.
Okay, Cameron, and then I think Sean had, I don't know if Sean, if you
had. I just wanted to see if I was on.
Okay, yes, you are here.
All right, good. Sorry.
So as of, I think it was 3:07, the record will show that you're on the call.
All right.
Sean? We need your mic on, Sean.
It appears to be on. We can't hear you, Sean.
No.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
That's so weird. Okay. I have some concerns about this. One, I noticed that right away. I brought this up with the authority manager when I noticed that there were, you know, multiple locks debris all over the street. I take it, as staff did not go and remove those locks prior to the contractor coming in. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And then the contractor was told they could cut the locks, or
they had a key to unlock them. They were supposed to unlock them, reinstall a new meter, and then lock them. But they were having some difficulty, and it was taking up too much time, according to what I've been told.
So they just cut them.
And was this negotiated? Was the lock issue a part of any of the discussions prior to executing this contract?
I can't tell you that. Nobody had any discussions about the contract prior.
Well, my personal opinion is I think it's a waste of $11,000. I contacted the authority manager as soon as I saw it and was pretty frustrated. And, we can point fingers all we want, but, we had an opportunity to not spend this $11,000, and somehow we didn't figure out a way to do it. So I would be opposed to spending $11,000 on lock. That's my opinion.
Tom?
Have anybody talked to the vendor and find out if they had permission to cut it, or did they make this decision on their own?
Honestly, I wasn't involved in the conversations. I can't answer that. I do know that we were aware of it after a couple days.
Well, if it turns out that they just did this because they wanted to save time, well, I think they ought to be responsible for those locks.
They have a portion that we knew may have to be cut off. They did not have permission to cut them off.
I think that's a very good point, Tom. If I recollect, Kirk did mention to me that the contractor was struggling with several of their locks, and he framed it in a way that he said he had told told the contractor that with those locks that didn't open, that they could cut them off. It was never represented to me that that was a free-for-all or how many that would include. So I think we may have potential issues on both sides of the contract, but it is an issue that we'll need to get to the bottom of regarding how that contract is closed out.
Well, I can understand the contractor wanted to save time. You know, they bid for a certain amount of time, and they were gung-ho to get it done. I understand. So I have my fear is that they just took advantage of the situation.
Cameron?
With our new system, do we need to have the locks to shut things off, or can we do it by computer now?
You would have to have a lock. You can't.
I thought with this new system that they could go in and just go ahead and turn it off that way. So it actually has to be done physical on the valve.
Rochelle?
I know when we were talking about not the AMR, because AMR is what we installed, but the AMI, where they have the master radios, that we don't actually have to physically go out, and it is something in our master plan. There is an ability to see each meter. I don't think there is the ability to turn it off remotely, though.
Right.
So my understanding is that the locks are in place to make sure that our customers don't use it as a water shutoff valve, and to so that we can have our policies and procedures that we have in place. And so to go to a different system and not use locks, we would have to change our policy, I believe. So we have two different issues here. One is we have a contract issue regarding whether or not the contractor received permission to cut off locks and whether or not there's any liability on his side. Then we have the issue that now we have potentially 11 or 1,000 meters without locks on them, and how are we going to handle that?
Kind of sounds like they didn't want to use the key and they just used the fast key of NIP. Sounds like it.
Well, they started on Ocean, so it would have some issues with the locks getting sand in them. I think that's where that discovery was made. Am I correct, Rochelle?
Tom?
When staff goes out and either connects or disconnects a meter, do they have these problems with locks, or do they just unlock them? Or do they have to cut them occasionally?
Rochelle?
On occasion, they do have to cut them, but I would not say to this extent. 99% of the time, they can unlock them.
That's what I thought.
Has his hand up.
I don't know if you can see me here.
Yeah, Sean, go ahead. I can't see that far on you yet.
No, that's okay. I just to reiterate, the conversation that I had with the authority manager was similar to the one that you did, Carolyn. You know, the response that I got was that they were asked to unlock the locks, and when they had difficulty unlocking the locks, they were authorized to cut them off. But this seems like, if we're talking 1,000 locks, this was just a policy then that the contractor adopted to save some time. So, you know, I think we need to have that conversation with the contractor. But this is an $11,000 expense that was completely unnecessary, and I'm not sure that I feel right about using our ratepayers' money cover up a mistake that we made? Do we have a written policy that says that our locks, that our meters need to be locked, and that's our official policy?
Wondering, since this involves a contract and there are facts to be chased down, if we need to involve our legal advisors and see what they consider to be the right course of action. Yes, Michelle?
Does everybody have a copy of the contract?
No, never seen it.
Never seen it.
Maybe I should send the board of directors a copy of the contract?
I don't know if that's necessary. I'm sure that if anybody wants one, they can get one. I think that Ann's suggestion is probably the right road to go down at this point. We still have work pending on this contract with regard to the LID. We'll need to continue with that. I think depending on how the contract is read, any emails that have been back and forth between the contractor and the authority manager, we probably need to pull those. To see if we've got any written documentation of what's happened. We will not make a final payment on this contract until we get this issue sorted out. It sounds like this is not an emergency situation to get these locks back in, so we need to get the issues sorted out, and then we can figure out where to go with the locks, and whether or not we're considering changing policy or keeping policy where it's at. Yes, Tom?
I think we ought to just sit on this until we get some facts. I don't want to go out and buy new locks until we figure out who's liable for them. Because we got to, if it's our fault, we have to, you know, be transparent to our constituents. But the bottom line here, I definitely would like to see that contract if there's exactly what was lined item, and just for my own personal knowledge.
Michelle, would you then send a copy of the contract to all board members? And if you will also then gather the hard data that we need to determine what was and wasn't said, gather that information. In the meantime, we'll move forward with the work. You're moving forward with working with Springbrook and getting that tested. We know that this next coming meter read will be a combination of the two. Would you also track the additional hours that it's going to take us to do both those things? In other words, we expected at this point to be on with the AMR system up and running, correct? But it was because...
Yes, we were told that.
And we were told that by internally, or did Springbrook tell us it was going to work with this software?
Authority manager and the manufacturer of the new meters.
So the manufacturer of the new meters told us it would work with our current Springbrook?
No, they said it would work with Springbrook. Nobody verified what version we had.
Okay. All right, then. I guess there's not anything we can do there, but understand that it's going to take additional staff time to work through this next meter read session, and we need to watch that carefully and know where those hours go. And the two meters that were not installed, did we happen to get pictures of those as we approached the site?
I doubt it. They did install them, though. Our staff did.
Okay. Would you make note of date and time and that was done so that we have the paper trail on that?
Yes.
John?
Before I forget, I did, and maybe I can just talk to either Michelle or Rochelle independently, I did hear from someone that was in Twist that their meter hadn't been replaced. and their neighbor's meter was leaking.
We're getting calls.
Okay. I'll follow up with you then.
So it sounds to me, I know that we did have some leaking meters and some meters installed in reverse. That's also data we're going to want if we're going to be negotiating for the lock issue. Cameron?
What about the issue with Joanne Waters? Did you guys talk about hers, that her faucet and sink and with sand and mud, and her system is still leaking and she's still having issues? I know that you said that Leonard was out there to fix that. That are we replacing people's faucets that got boogered up by the sand and mud and that did damage homeowners?
Cameron, if there's a homeowner complaint, it needs to come to the staff before it comes to the board, so that we have a paper trail on that. So if she's still having problems, I'm assuming she's in contact with staff. And at that point, if there's still a concern and we aren't doing the right job, then staff will bring it to us.
Okay.
Hi, Leonard.
As far as Joanne Waters goes, I went over.
Go ahead, Leonard. Sorry. We assume that you'd like to share something with us since you're here.
I muted it, sorry.
Are we unmuted?
You're unmuted.
Hello. I went to Joanne Waters and went into her house. We tore her sink apart. It's not her sink that is the issue. It is behind the wall. She had said that she had galvanized piping. So I don't know what exactly that means. More than likely, it's probably grown pretty close to being shut. And when I don't know exactly what transpired with the meter and the problem with the gasket not being in there, but evidently there was some dirt or something of that went down their line. Instead of flushing the system out before it went into the house, it didn't get done, and so right now we're kind of at a standstill. It was going to be re-looked at when we could get under her house. It holds a lot of water under there this time of year, so it was something that was going to be looked at again. I did not want to take off her fittings that come out of the wall for fear of being an old galvanized line and then breaking and causing more problems. So for right now, she said that she was okay with the pressure she had until we could get something else addressed.
So if I'm to understand you correctly, it sounds like in the process of installing the meter, it appears to be that because it wasn't pre-flushed, that debris got into her line and may have caused a problem?
That's what I assume. I do not know that because I was not there.
Okay. And at the same time, because it may be an older service and it may be an older line and it may be galvanized, it could be just from the fact that the water was turned off and then turned back on. Could that cause the same issue?
If a flake of rust were to fall from lack of pressure or no pressure or all the water being drained out of their line while they were repairing it, yes, it's very possible that the water pressure was holding the rust out, and when there was no water in it, it collapsed. But until I can look into it further, I'm not sure.
So, Cameron, does that answer your question at this point?
Yeah, she was scooping mud and sand out of her sink. And it wasn't just a cupful, it was several cups and mud. I'm just wondering the possibility of this incident, the replacement of a faucet or something, you know. I mean, are we having other issues of the same with other people? Or is this precise?
We have a at least one other customer that I have been in contact with a couple times because their water was supposed to be turned off, and the contractor left it on, and it flooded their basement.
No.
So there is some damage in their house that they're having assessed, and they will get back to me.
So will this go back on us or the contractor? I mean, where does the contract, what does it cover as far as, or does it even cover issues?
It doesn't cover much.
That is a question that can't be answered tonight, Cameron. I would like to see staff document very clearly and with pictures, if we can, these two instances where we have issues, where it appears that it may be an older service, or it may be the contractor that made a mistake, or it may be the issue of turning the water on and off, and to get as much information as possible, because both of these cases and cases of quality of the work will need to be reviewed by legal counsel that will then give us direction in terms of what we need to do. And I appreciate what Rochelle said about another customer that has an issue and that they're getting it assessed. We are in that data gathering phase and not a decision making phase yet. Other questions or concerns? All right, it sounds like we have quite a bit of work to do on this remaining contract, and we need to get things put back into place like we usually have. Right. Item 3B, Horn Creek Internet. We have an issue Michelle has done some work on. Do you want to update us on what the issue is and what our options might be?
Sure, thank you. Horn Creek was set up with CenturyLink in 2011 when it was built for the phones and the internet. The internet at that time was set up to run at a provisional speed of 1.5 megabytes per second. It is now running at 0.5 megabyte per second. With the lack of speed, none of our contractors, whether that be our tech support global, nor Paul, who would help us with the membrane system, could get online and get into the SCADA and give us any assistance whatsoever, because there's not enough bandwidth to do that. So I contacted CenturyLink, and they said they think we could get 6 megabytes, but they don't know because they can't lay out the land and they don't want to come out unless they know for sure. But the big bend in the river is a drop point. We asked them if we could get a new modem. I have one coming, but they're not sure. They think it's running properly. Of course, that's from their end, not our end. So I contacted the Wave 4 years ago when we put in the fiber optic line at PCJ's main office. We also got a quote from them to take a line out to Horn Creek. We declined at the time. I'm not exactly sure why, but we did decline. It was a 5-year contract. It was $3,000 plus $315 a month. And that was with Coastcom. Coastcom was bought out by the Wave, and the Wave has changed their system. They have the same person that I talked to 4 and 5 years ago. So he's giving me updates on how the changes have happened and how their billing happens. He doesn't believe that there would be any real upfront costs except for maybe a couple of small peripheral hardware pieces. However, the cost of the internet would be $450 a month. And that sounds really, really high, and it feels high, and Global Network thought that that was a little high. However, if Horn Creek goes down and I can't get online to fix it, what am I going to do? So for the good of the the water system for Pacific City and Woods, I would like to further investigate or and or get a formal quote from the Wave. We already have a conduit that runs that whole, I don't know if it's 2,000 feet, it's quite a ways. So that helps quite a bit in timing and getting it done. But right now we're kind of stuck.
Ann and then Cameron?
I have a couple of questions. One has to do with CenturyLink and any conversations we or the technical global folks might have had with CenturyLink about what caused the diminution of communication speed out there.
Okay. That could just be land movement. That could be land moving the line, twisting it. It could be an old modem. It could be what I feel like it is that there are so many customers that it has shrunk the availability of their services.
So many CenturyLink customers have deteriorated the signal that we're getting, or signal is probably not the right word, but so has
bandwidth.
CenturyLink responded to any inquiry in a way that is helpful?
Global did talk to them. They didn't feel comfortable with what they said. They didn't quite believe them. But I also had another conversation with Carolyn the other day, noting that CenturyLink in rural areas, they are not upgrading their infrastructure and supporting it as they used to. Is that correct, Carolyn? Did I say that correctly?
That's what I've heard about two different levels where CenturyLink is headed, and also in terms of their broadband exhaust system, they haven't added any more broadband customers in Pacific City area, I think, for the last 4 to 5 years. And so I know one of the things that you had said, Ann, in terms of speed, since this is internet over telephone, it doesn't react the same as internet over cable. And so theoretically, we shouldn't see a decrease in speed with the use of a landline. But at the same time, the decrease in speed could be due to a lack of upgraded infrastructure relative to switches with the central switching station that may create this problem. But I think, Ann, you had some additional pieces about what we might do with CenturyLink, and Tom, I'll get to you soon, Ann, or after Cameron.
Well, I do have a serious concern about utility that where interest in rural areas starts to wane as they advertise mostly on television and the radio and whatnot, the 5G that they're rolling out in Portland. We have a state public utilities commission, and we have state representatives that work tirelessly on all kinds of issues affecting rural areas. And this is certainly one, and it is a serious one. We would all agree. So I don't know, because I've never done this, I don't know exactly how to proceed on those two fronts, but I don't think it's acceptable to let CenturyLink not update their own switches or whatever it is that would improve this, and see our service decline at that level when we have so much at stake. So somehow I think that we need to pursue CenturyLink and see if there's anything we can do to get them to put this back the way it was. And Michelle, I think you mentioned that we do have a new modem on the way. Very possibly that will help. I don't know that, but do you have any timeline for when we might expect that to arrive?
No, I don't. I don't.
Do they send a technician out to install that?
No, I would have to. No, it's just a plug and play, the modem itself. I can do it.
okay, might it be better to ask for a technician to come out and install it?
Sure, I can
ask.
So
they can test the speed of the line?
I would call Global at that point, and we can test the line right there. I know how to test the speed up and down of a internet.
My kind of point here is to have CenturyLink doing it because it puts them on the table for having specifically dealt with the issue themselves. Whether
yes, I understand that. And when they test, yes, they would have to be there because when they tested it for us, they said it was fine. When we tested it 10 seconds later, it was not.
Karen, you had your hand up, and then Sean.
Yeah, no. They're supposed to provide us a, what was that, 1.5?
Yes.
So can't we go back on them? You know, you sold us the service for 1.5, and you hold up your agreement to that level. And another question, what about HughesNet as far as going to not in the canyon, so it won't work there?
No.
Yeah, I mean, it's like we're paying you a good money for the service, and you're failing us. So if they don't, I would like to, you know, like Dan said, you know, maybe get a representative into it because you're leaving the little guys off to the side, and this is, we're providing water service, you know, which is a necessity, you know, so.
My response to that is 1.5 would not be good enough today.
Right. But even still, they're not even providing that.
That's correct. They are not. But the WAVE would be providing 50.
How much is a normal service, I mean, for something like that, to be at the 5 level?
Well, the office is paying 200. And we're getting 20, I tested out at 20. Is that correct, Rochelle? Do you remember what we, okay, I think we tested out at 20.
Which, all right, Sean and then Tom.
I think Tom had his hand up before me. Tom, do you have something to say?
Tom.
Yes, I wanna kinda just go over this quickly. Is it my understanding that our telemetry, the Horn Creek, is down? Is that correct?
No.
Oh, it's slow and we can't, just slow and we can't read it, or what?
No, it's not telemetry at all. It has to do with uploads and downloads over the internet if there was any major problems with the SCADA system from Paul. And or any other, if we needed global network support. I can't upload or download any upgrades to the software unless they come down and personally do it right there. And that's extremely costly. So my upload and download speeds are just too slow. They're not mine, they're yours.
Okay, well then, as Cameron mentioned and as Ann mentioned, you know, we have a PUC, and we should probably make a complaint. CenturyLink, even in the cities, has had problems with maintenance. One of the reasons why the Oregon Lottery went to another service, because they were constantly screwing around with our data feeds. So this is not an isolated incident just because of rural areas. I think we may need to make a complaint, and then we got to fix this. We got to fix it.
Don and then Ann.
Yeah. So is this, Michelle, is this a DSL service that we have?
It's, yes. I'm going to say that CenturyLink is a DSL service.
Okay. So there's a couple of things. One, DSL is distance and user dependent. So that shouldn't be a surprise that our you know, feeds and capabilities are going down. Two, you're always going to get slower speeds with a CenturyLink provided modem than you are with a modem that you can purchase yourself. So if you're getting another modem shipped in from CenturyLink, my guess is you're going to have the same speeds that you get now because they can throttle those modems. So that's something to think about. You know, it might be worth for $100 or $150 buying our own modem outside of CenturyLink and seeing if that makes a difference before we commit to $450 a month through the Wave. But I'm absolutely not opposed to getting a quote from Wave and just to see where they're at.
Yeah, I agree. I think the modem would be maybe a big buying our own modem and stuff would, you know, because they've got ones out there that are beefed up. So,
and two things. One is, Michelle, is the question of the modem, as Sean was talking about, which one would work best. Is that a question that Global can answer?
Yes.
Okay. So we could ask them that question. Oh dear, the other question just flew the coop.
So let me see if I can reframe this a little bit. We are currently having problems with our internet connection in Horn Creek. At the same time, because there have been changes over the last 5 years, we're becoming aware that 1.5 megs is not enough in the long term to keep Horn Creek healthy and moving forward, that we have files that need to be uploaded and be available. We need to make that internet connection good enough that Paul can help us when we need their help at that location. So as much as we're willing to invest a certain amount in order to see if we can't bring ourselves back up to 1.5 meg, but at the same time, what I hear you saying is 1.5 meg is not adequate going forward.
I believe that's true. That's the impression I get from Global. Yes.
John?
1.5 megs is definitely not enough. There's no way you can do anything with 1.5 megs. So
if we could get a tech to come out and they could commit to 6, which is around the bend, if I could get them to do that, it would be a good step. But still at 6, we're looking, you know, it may cover us for a couple of years. But I will, as asked, I will pursue and file a complaint. I will check with Global on the modem, and I will get the Wave to do a quote. Did I miss something?
Here's something. Why don't we shoot power up on top of our water tower up and have our own phone lines and stuff like that and sell it back to the companies and use the money and stuff. Since we got that hill property up there, it hit the valley there. We can sell back to the phone companies. Just an idea.
I remembered the second thing I was going to say, and it was to support Sean's comment, and Michelle, now it's on your list to actually go ahead and get a quote from the Wave. I think that would be smart. We're involved in long-range planning, and we need to have that information, I think, to make a decision.
Okay, so it sounds like we're all on board with the three things that Michelle's listed. That's getting the new modem or modems in order to see if we can't bring back the 1.5 meg, including pulling, seeing if we can't get somebody from CenturyLink out here to show us that or to prove to them that they aren't even delivering on that. The second then is to get a quote from the Wave in terms of a better situation, creating a better situation for us to communicate with from Horn Creek. And the third is, do we want to go after, that's the wrong phrase, do we want to communicate? Michelle would file a complaint, but does someone from the board want to call and communicate with our representative about this particular issue?
think before we go the formality of contacting our representative that we need to go to CenturyLink and make them understand how serious this is and schedule a technician to come out, and maybe if we can get it to six, we could go ahead and do that now, and then we could consider the contract from the WAVE.
Six is a new system for them, so it will require another price tag. So 1.5 is what we're contracted at now. Six is a new issue, but I'll look into that as well.
So we need a technician to get us back to 1.5 ASAP, yeah. Right?
Yes.
All right. Any concerns about our process of proceeding ahead with this? All right, great. Thank you, Michelle. We'll make sure both these items are on the agenda for the April meeting. Item number four. Since our authority manager is no longer with us, Michelle has at least temporarily agreed to rescind her resignation and to help us through the budget process. You're on mute. What was that, Michelle?
I didn't resign, I was retiring.
Rescind is what I said. Sorry if it wasn't clear. Anyway, we are in need of a budget officer, and I would be happy to take nomination. Ann?
Madam Chair, I nominate Michelle Hughes as the budget officer for the 21-22 budget cycle.
I'll second.
Can I make a comment?
Yes, you can, Cameron.
I would like to see Rochelle also sit on that so she can also start learning this process.
Cameron, I can assure you that Rochelle is very engaged with the process at this point. The formality is that we need to appoint a budget officer, and it has been moved and seconded that we appoint Michelle Hughes as the authority's budget officer for fiscal year 21-22. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Tom, were you and I?
Yes.
Thank you.
I'd like to ask Michelle.
I'm sorry?
Tag Rochelle.
It is unanimous that Michelle Hughes will be our budget officer for this next fiscal year. Thank you very much, Michelle. We appreciate you stepping up and helping us out. Item five, information gathering. We alluded to this a little bit during our last meeting, and the gist is that the board is interested in collecting input from staff regarding recent their recent experience and their opinions on issues, and we want to talk about what is the process and how we go about gathering that information in a way that makes it a confidential process and respects the opinion and personhood of all of our staff. So the discussion is open. Don?
Well, I feel like we need to do some sort of assessment. I don't know what you want to call it. I've been kind of referring to it internally within myself and the notes that I take as an HR assessment. But we need to conduct some sort of an HR assessment. You know, we have just gone through an authority manager replacement process over the course of the last 2 years, and that process did not end the way that we expected it to. So we need to do some sort of an HR assessment where we get input from staff as to how that experience went. We need to get input from board as to how that experience went. And so my thought process is either we need to hire a consultant to come in to assess that, or what would be my preference would be to have a subcommittee of the board, a two-member committee of the board, do an HR assessment and then decide whether or not after reporting back to the board if we need to do some sort of a formal consultant HR assessment.
Tom?
I went over the Proffman documents that were sent out, and I am thinking we have not had a one-year assessment of the previous manager, and didn't they? Isn't there a guarantee that if it doesn't work out, that the only thing that they would go through the process again and charge us would be for expenses? And I believe that was a one-year guarantee.
Michelle?
Sorry, I shouldn't be in this conversation. Yeah, it was, but he's been there for over a year, so the contract was ended.
So, Tom, you are very correct. We had a one-year contract as of the date of hiring with Proffman that ended mid-December. The board did a six-month evaluation of the authority manager, and going to do the next one at 18 months rather than doing one at a year. And I believe that part of what contributed to that was where we were with COVID and how we perceived things were going. I did make a call to Proffman to clarify some issues, and they are very, and that goes to the authority manager search, which is the number 7 item on the agenda. So backing out of that, we need to get back to the, I like how Sean's described it, the HR assessment piece if we could, and then we'll come back to the authority manager search. Ann?
I also like Sean's terminology. I think that's a good concept. And excuse me, getting staff input in the review of the authority manager is a subject that we have talked about before. It's not a new subject to any of us. We did have some discussions with an HR consultant about that. I feel personally that we are too small, including the board, to enter into a somebody of work interviewing each staff person. I fear that would cause more problems than it would solve. And just that question alone, to me, is reason, and there are other reasons, that my recommendation would be that we engage Ryan Fleming again. He is familiar with our operation. He's familiar with the review process. He was part of those discussions about staff input. We're in a different place now than we were before. It's a place that's not going to be it's a place that I'm sure Ryan has dealt with and other offices and businesses he's worked with. But in that we are too small to have an HR department, so to speak, I see him and his expertise as being our HR department. And I've been extremely happy with the conversations we've had with him. He understands the issue of small working groups and what the pitfalls of that can be. So that would be my strong suggestion, is at the very least that we engage Ryan for a consultation on this very issue.
Tom?
And I agree with you that gentleman would be helpful. However, I disagree with you where that we wouldn't be involved. I think it would be, we have too many issues here to just let a totally impartial person involved here. We want to find out some of the internal issues that happen here with staff and management and the board here, and it all comes back to lack of communication. Now, some of that's policy, some of that is lack of transparency, and but most of all, we once again we've determined we have a toxic work environment, and we got to figure out what the heck's going on. Right. And that means us as a board, not just an impartial advisor. That's not to say that an impartial advisor is a bad idea. I actually think that's a dang good idea. But we need, I'd like to see the board, a two-member, three-member, or all of us, with great finesse and with compassion, talk to our employees one at a time in total confidentiality and see if there's a way that we can our communication skills between us.
Well, thank you, Tom. I think we're on the same track because what I'm suggesting is that we, the board, have that meeting with Ryan to discuss that type of approach and any others that he might have in mind. I don't feel as though that's a decision that that we should make without consultation with a professional HR person.
Oh, I agree.
And if that's if that is his recommendation, then we will have a fulsome discussion of that and we'll all know how to proceed. So.
Okay.
So I think we're there, but we have a first step to take first is what I'm thinking.
So would the board favor, I was thinking of two different ways. The full board could ask Ryan to attend one of our meetings and we could discuss this issue. Or we could ask a subcommittee to have a Blue Jeans conference with Ryan and come up with some outline and then have Ryan present something to the board. There's several ways to get there.
I think we ought to have
personally,
a
think the whole board needs to be there personally.
Don?
Yes, I agree that the whole board needs to be part of a discussion, but I have to say, I liked working with Ryan, and I thought he was a good HR consultant, but I have some apprehension in terms of him helping us with the aspect of an HR assessment with our employees. You know, my impression of the process that we went before was that Ryan was quite cautious and apprehensive about engaging and soliciting feedback from the employees for the authority manager review process. And so I'm a little apprehensive about engaging him in that aspect of it. I think we got to have an interaction with our staff ASAP. I mean, this is a big deal we're going through. We need to figure out what's going on, and we need it sooner rather than later.
I agree.
Can we have that initial meeting with Ryan and talk about now we're at a different place than we were when we had that discussion before?
What do you mean, Ann?
Have a meeting of the whole board with Ryan Fleming to talk about that was then, here we are now. So let's talk about now and what has transpired in between and put all the ideas out on the table and have that discussion now at under different circumstances. And to Sean's concerns, we may find a different response given the circumstances.
I still think that we need to have a discussion with our employees. We have a body of the board. But then it's going to have to, you know, it's a balancing of, you know, of what is said and confidentiality. And they have to be able to be honest and upfront. And I don't know if they're all willing to do that.
I think our staff will participate in a process as we move forward, and I think they will participate in it like they do their job with as much honesty and as much forthrightness that they possibly can.
Do you think it should be one-on-one?
I'm very concerned about having the board members talk directly to staff because of the power issues with the fact that we are board members. I think that's a concern. I think that it's the concern regarding confidentiality. It's hard to put people, to put us as a group doing those interviews without getting some HR advice, because there are legal ramifications as to what we ask and how we ask it. And it's not an area I don't think that any of us are an expert in.
Right.
So
could we ask Ryan to do that?
We could ask Ryan a number of questions, but I think what Tom and Ann had said earlier is to get Ryan in a call in a Blue Jeans conference with the board. One is, this is our concern. Specifically right now, is this something you can or can't help us with? How would you go about it? How will we know that you can get the information that we're looking for? What's the structure of something like that, and what's the legalities around the process? So I think we all have our individual preferences about how that might happen, and it needs to happen yesterday. But I think to move forward without good counsel could put us in a position that we don't want to be in, and maybe make it worse than it might have been.
Come around and bite us. Well, I think we should contact Ryan, get him in on a meeting with the board, and go from there. Okay. Next week, meet with the employees.
Do
we need a motion to do that, or is consensus adequate?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay.
Oh, I don't know. I hope I don't pay for it, but that is the money.
Larry,
do you need your
mic off?
No,
do you need a transcript?
I do.
Michelle,
do
you
want it?
Is there a way to
go over the
signing card?
That's good.
Okay.
Who's on
her
phone?
Whoa.
I think Michelle can fix it.
All right. Michelle, do we need a motion at this point? I don't think it would hurt to have one.
I think you should.
Thank you.
I will move that we contact Ryan Fleming of HR
Solutions.
Solution, thank you. Ask him to join us for a board meeting for a specific interaction with staff.
Mitchell Street, Southeast.
I gotta look it up.
Oh. Did I put Southeast on commercial?
I think I tried it both ways.
Who is on the phone?
Larry Brown.
Larry, can you hear us?
They're asking if you can hear them.
Oh my God.
You're gonna come on?
Can you mute your phone?
Oh.
You're careful.
I can. Thank you.
Thank you.
Please do.
Couldn't get there fast enough.
And please restate your motion.
Okay. I move that we contact Ryan Fleming of HR Solutions and ask him to join with the full board for a discussion of gathering input from the staff and how we might best proceed.
I'll second that motion.
It has been moved and seconded that we contact Ryan Fleming of HR Solutions to join the full board in a conversation about how to conduct an HR assessment. All in favor, say aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Thank you. Does the board want this to be...
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I neglected to say in a special meeting. Does that need to be said?
No, it does not.
In the motion?
Oh.
Thank you.
So my question for the board is that there seems a number, more than one person has suggested this is of concern in a very timely fashion. Does the board want to have a special meeting to address this issue? And if so, how soon would you like this to occur?
Next week.
Monday.
I think a special meeting is completely appropriate, and I like the idea of next week. It'll depend on Ryan's schedule, as well as ours.
Yeah, I think this needs to happen soon, too, but I'm looking over other stuff, and I'm wondering, and I realize it's a separate issue, but it's related in terms of scheduling, if we should postpone the workshop that we have scheduled on the master plan, given everything that's going on now and trying to get a bunch more meetings on the book, and I don't know where we stand with getting information from engineering on that master plan, but we're going to have a lot of things stacking up here, so I'm wondering if we should postpone that meeting and make this meeting a priority.
I think we ought to make this meeting a priority, that's for sure.
Ditto.
Okay. Do people want to postpone the master plan meeting, which now the master plan process in terms of the board is going to look a little different because we don't have an authority manager to go to for information about projects, so we'll need to have staff and engineering input with that discussion before we get to priority setting. So it's going to be more than just that one meeting that we had scheduled with Rob Mills. So it sounds like the board would like to move the master plan process out a bit and to place this in a priority order, and we can move forward. At the same time, we'll still be getting our master plan documents tomorrow, as far as we know. That's still on target.
If memory serves, Carolyn, that workshop was the 23rd, is that correct?
That is correct.
So we'll just cancel that for now?
If that is what the board wishes to do. Okay.
I think in light of the priority we're discussing it, that makes sense to me.
We are going to have a very, very busy spring because we'll have budget process starting soon, and we'll want to have finished the master planning process before the budget is finalized. So that means that we will not be able to put off the master plan discussion more than a couple of weeks. John?
Why do we need to have the master plan workshop prior to the budget?
So that if any changes in SDCs, which or rate structure gets put into this next budget.
But this is a 20-year master plan, right? So I mean, is there a statutory time limit we're running up against?
We're overdue, I believe. Our last master plan was 2004. We did an update in 2009. And at that point, was it a 20-year or was it a 10-year? I'll have to go back and do some checking before I can answer you accurately, Sean.
That's okay. What I'm getting at here is that, you know, I don't know that all of us have the ability to be, I mean, we could have meetings every day, and that's starting to push things a little bit. And so, to me, right now, given the situation, you know, the master plan is not a priority right now. I think we have some internal issues and replacing an authority manager and figuring some things out that need to be a priority. And, you know, if we're already late on the master plan being a little bit later, is it going to change much?
That seemed to be the thinking of the full board?
Yes.
Yep.
All right. All right, then we will head we will get that next meeting in terms of the HR assessment on the schedule, and I will indefinitely postpone the master plan meetings, but we will still distribute the master plan so that when that comes back, people are ready to move forward with that. Next item on the agenda is the interim authority manager options. We know that we are not going to be able to get a permanent authority manager in here in probably less than 6 or 7 months. It might be sooner, it might be longer, but the time frame is more than a few weeks out or even a month or two out. So in the meantime, what are we going to do to take the place of an authority manager? I think that that might be two-pronged. Bringing an interim authority manager in is going to take some time to find out exactly what our options are and to put someone on contract or bring them in full-time. And the other part is until we get that up and running, we may want to put a board liaison in place for our staff so that there is a clear line of communication when there is an issue that isn't resolvable at staff level or is an issue that needs to be brought to the attention of the board. I don't want to leave staff in the position of having to call all five board members if there's a hiccup or choosing their favorite one and figuring out how to get that information out. So I would suggest that we, as we're going through this discussion, consider that we need something in the very short term as well as an interim manager. So let's talk about interim managers. Tom, you had your hand up.
Well, however we want to do this, whether you want to be you or me or Ann or whoever representing the board, I think that all operational matters that are outside normal operation, the entire board needs to know what's going on. Now that's a broad overview, but the problem here is, you know, I've been here a couple of years and I don't know what's going on operationally at all, other than just what I had from Kurt, and occasionally he'd tell me what was going on. But on a day-to-day basis, you know, other than basic operational procedure, anything out of the ordinary, anything, the whole board needs to know about it.
That's the policy of the authority.
Well, how come I haven't heard about some of the things that have been going on then?
Who would you hear those from? I mean, who would have had that information?
Well, once again, we come back to a lack of communication, a line of communication between staff and the board. I don't know how we're going to do this, Carolyn. All I know is that we have a huge problem here with lack of communication. We got to figure it out somehow.
And in the past, Tom, the responsibility for communication between the staff and the board resided with the authority manager.
I understand that. But
now, so if there were things that we were not knowing, it's because we weren't being told.
Okay, so how are we going to correct that?
Well, I think one of the ways that we've talked about already is by having staff input into the authority manager evaluation, that's something that we plan on fixing. We don't know what the solution is, but we're headed in that direction. It may also be that we need to be clearer about how we expect the authority manager to communicate with the board. And in terms of, we had an authority manager at one point that knew where that boundary was. Recently, it seems like there may have been a challenge with it. So, yes, we do have some issues to fix. I'm wondering at this point, though, How do we want to proceed with putting an interim authority manager in place? What does that look like? What's the board's preference on what we choose to do?
Well, I have one other suggestion. We have a couple of lead people that have been around a long time for a temporary situation. Perhaps one of these men would kind of fill in, and they're both honorable people. You know who I'm talking about. So kind of take over to do the day-to-day operations unless there's something critical, and then get to the board.
John?
I do believe one of our leads is a woman, is it not?
Oh, excuse me.
Just want to make sure. A couple of thoughts. One, I like the idea of a liaison between the staff and the board. I think that's a good idea. I also think it's imperative that we get a temporary authority manager in here ASAP. Because we don't have any of the information from the last time we went through the interview process, I honestly can't remember which firm this person worked for, but one of the people that we interviewed, I want to say worked for CH2M Hill, maybe, or one of those types of companies, and they were a contract manager for some sort of a water district or sewer district or something like that. So he was not an employee of the city or the county, was an employee of this engineering firm, and was contracted to run it. And I honestly can't remember if it was maybe it was even the guy who was in wherever he was, Saudi Arabia or wherever he was. I don't remember where it was. It's been so long ago now. But there was something about that. So there's clearly some group or some engineering firm or something.
Sean, did you finish what you were saying? While you're looking to connect it back with us with voice, I'll go back to Tom and then to Cameron, and any time that you get back on, Sean, jump in.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, please.
Okay, sorry, my internet went out. So, I mean, it's out there. There's an availability somehow. And I feel like we need to get an interim authority manager in here right away. And Tom, you mentioned somebody that you had talked to, and I don't know if that person is appropriate or not, but they worked for some organization that I think helps entities like ours with that very kind of thing. Is that, am I remembering that correctly?
That's correct. The organization is the Oregon Association of Water Utilities, and one of the things that they do is provide temporary expertise for situations where you need an operator or a manager or something like that on a temporary basis. The fellow's name, who is the executive director, is Jason Green, and he lives here in Pacific City. I don't know if he'd be interested in being temporary. I have a feeling he probably wouldn't. That particular job he has as executive director is a very trying job. But that organization does provide experts through the utilities, water, sewer, and other small districts, but specifically water, sewer. And that would be a good organization to at least look at.
Don't we belong to that organization?
Yes, we do.
So why don't we utilize it? If we belong to it, let's use it.
Yeah, we pay dues. We pay dues for it, I guess.
But I guess that would be my suggestion, is that we contact the Oregon Association of Water Facilities and the Special District Associations of Oregon and say, hey, here's our dilemma. Can you give us some advice about getting an interim director in here or an interim authority manager in here? And if we need to do a contract for, I mean, I think it's got to be 9 months, but maybe a year. I think we got to get somebody in here.
Okay, so Anne, go ahead.
I did some reading about the Association of Water Utilities, and they do have a very broad portfolio of members and services they provide. It did not look to me as though it's the same kind of thing, Sean, as you were talking about with CH2M Health. And I have a vague recollection of that situation too, where they might have one person who would go and do a job. The Association of Water Utilities appears to do a lot of really great work on a consulting basis and then a physical basis with small districts that have limited resources and physical setups. It also seemed to be for those member groups maybe a good resource for help in examining and solving a number of specific challenges. I think in the notes that we got from Carolyn, and I don't have them exactly right in front of me, but I think so let me go back to them. That highest priority needs, there's quite a list there of management and supervisory and knowledge of ORSs and budget things and operator requirements and all of that. So truly, I think it sounds like we're all in agreement that what we're really talking about is an authority manager. Then to go a slightly different direction, I recall, and I think you all will too, that when Mr. Owen left his position, he agreed to be available on a consulting basis as we made the transition to a new authority manager. I don't know to what extent any of those discussions ever occurred. I did not hear Kirk refer to any conversations with the former authority manager, but in light of our recent developments and considering that Mr. Owen personally led the development from the ground up of our existing water and wastewater treatment plants. We all know he has extensive budget and facility and systems management experience, and he certainly has relevant knowledge of state and federal laws and extensive experience with developing master plans. I just think the optimum approach to address our needs with the speed that we're all talking about, and I think we all agree on, would be to explore with him, whether it be full-time or part-time as an employee or on a consulting basis as needed, that we explore some kind of alternative or arrangement like with Mr. Olin. And I think it would be a good thing if we empowered or asked our board chair to explore those alternatives with him and see if there's a mutually agreeable proposal that could come forward to the board. He said he'd be the only person who knows all that he knows and could hit the ground running right away.
I think we're moving backwards if we do that. I think we need a completely impartial person to take over while we try to figure out what happened. Don't want to create more problems.
There's impartial, and there is completely foreign to the entire setting and the facilities and the people and the community and everything else. And I agree with you that in the big picture, we need impartiality, but we're not talking about a permanent authority manager. We're talking about somebody who can come in and help coordinate the daily activities and review the budget things and be effective at it on a, again, a part-time or consulting basis, whichever is mutually agreeable. But I think we all have agreed we have a pretty urgent need here. And I just can't think of an alternative to that that would be effective without weeks, if not months, of ramping up time for a perfect stranger coming in.
Well, I'm thinking that the organization, like the Oregon Association of Water Utilities, are experts in water utilities and in sewer facilities. They understand not just one particular system. They go around all over the state. They've been taking care of getting all during the fire season here, getting those waters folks back up and running. So these are not just totally, completely naive or unqualified people. I think we, I happen to really like our former authority manager and everything, but I think we're moving backwards, and it might cause more problems than it would solve, even on a temporary basis.
Yes, Sean?
I concur with Tom on this. I have massive respect and friendship with Tony Owen, but I think bringing him back on a temporary basis sends a mixed message, and I think it gets in the way of our HR assessment goals. I think it's really important that we get this HR assessment in here, and I just worry that bringing Tony back, even in an advisory capacity on a part-time basis, I think it muddies that up. And I just don't like that idea. I'm uncomfortable with that.
Cameron?
I agree. I'd like to see that we utilize the group that Tom suggested, pay dues to them. Let's get them in there and get somebody in there, a non-partial person. We're not hemorrhaging blood. I mean, the urgency, I mean, we're being able to handle things. We've got Michelle taking care of the budget. We've got our master plan. We're working on that. We're going forward. Let's not regress backwards. Let's get somebody in here, fresh blood, then he can bleed from the artery. No, just kidding. So, I'd like to make a motion that we bring in.
Hang on. I'd like to have some input here if I could.
Oh,
okie dokie.
Sorry.
Thank you. I think that there is positive attributes to all suggestions, and I'm wondering if we might do a blend here. What if I were to contact the Oregon Association of Water Utilities, SDAO, Prothman, and also Mr. Owen, and tell them what our situation is, and that we're looking for somebody on contract in some way for a 6 to 12 month period, and give them a little bit of background and ask them, one, if they're interested, and two, to propose to us how they would manage the situation and what the cost would be and what they think the important parameters are. Get that in writing so that we can review all those options. We know that bringing someone in that we're looking for a certain level of background or a certain level of certification, given that we have another staff member that has put forth his resignation, that's going to put us in a position so we would potentially need somebody with that kind of criteria. But that would address the potential CH2MH, MR. It would gather people from that direction. It would look at Jason Green's operation. It would give us an opportunity to let SCAO weigh in, and an opportunity for our former authority manager to weigh in and see what we get. And if we put a week deadline on that, gave them a week to give us input, I could get on the phone and make those calls tomorrow, then we would have something by next week and could address that at the same meeting that we're having with Ryan Fleming.
at least we would be one more step in that next direction. And it would give us a little more data and a little more information to work with to have an idea of what really is out there. Ann and then Sean?
Yeah, I think that's an excellent idea, Carolyn. I really do. It's the only thing I would ask you in your conversations with them to do, the only other thing would be to be very specific about the type of treatment plants that we have, because not all districts have the membrane water treatment plant or the what those words are for this wastewater treatment plant that I can't remember. And they were very new technology when they were put in, and we will need somebody that's familiar with that technology.
Thank you. John?
Yeah, so, and I realize this is going to, you know, jump in the gun a little bit on this, but I think it kind of directly relates to item 7 on the agenda. I'm okay, I think some modifications, I'm okay with using Prothman again to go through this process again. I think there's ways that we can improve this. So I'm okay with that, given that we're going to have some discussion about it and there's ways to improve it. So I'm okay with including Prothman in your solicitation, Carolyn. I'm opposed to including our previous authority manager, Tony Owen, on that. I feel very strongly that bringing Tony Owen back into the mix on this could open up all sorts of cans of worms. I very much respect Tony and his opinions and his career here, but I think that is asking for a lot of confusion.
I agree.
Me too.
All right, then at this point, I will leave Mr. Owen out of the mix. Ann, do you want to comment on that anymore?
Well, from a practical standpoint, I hate to disagree with Sean and Cameron and Tom, but I do. From a practical standpoint, the technical knowledge that he has of the systems that we have, I think is an asset that we're going to be hard-pressed to find anywhere else. Plus, the other things I mentioned, his knowledge of state and federal laws, budget procedures, and all those other things I said before. I just think that's an asset that if we don't at least explore it, that we're just closing the door on a potential opportunity. So I guess I would urge my fellow board members to reconsider the least bit of exploring it.
No, you can't.
We've been going backwards.
Okay. Cameron, are you concerned that if we ask for the information that then it sets the decision in motion?
Excuse me?
Are you concerned that if we ask for that information, it sets the decision in motion?
Yeah, I just don't think it's the way to go. We haven't had any issues with anybody. Everybody's been pleased with our decisions as a board. I think we're going to be asking for trouble again.
So here's my goal in suggesting that we throw a wide net is so that we have as much as possible to make the decision that we want to make, including our past or previous authority manager in that net was not saying that this is the right person and I want to put them in there, or including Jason Green's group. That's not, you know, whether I agree with what they could do or not is, from what I've read, is not of importance at this point. I'm wanting to throw the appropriate and the wide enough net so that we get enough feedback for which we can make a decision. And that we, as part of getting that feedback, that we may get additional information on why we want to choose one over the other. That was my only reason to say, how do we go about this? And I would recommend that we throw the widest net open possible. It didn't make sense to leave that option, to leave that particular avenue out.
No, I just think it would go backwards. I think, you know, Tony would take the...
Cameron, let's...
So anyway...
If you're there and you're at that point and don't feel like you can move, I can respect that. I don't want to debate whether or not somebody's a good person or whether or not that's appropriate with that particular... I don't think that's a conversation we want to have.
No, that's not what I mean, Carolyn. I just think that we'd be going backwards. I think we need to move forward. I think we need some fresh things. I really do. So...
I appreciate that. I hear what you said.
Okay, cool.
Any other comments? All right, since it sounds like the board is very clear and that the majority has said that we will narrow the net, then we will narrow the net this time around. And we'll see what we have and if we get what we need to move forward with a interim authority manager contract. Let me call it a contract, even though we don't know that may be exactly what it looks like at this point. I will do those calls tomorrow and ask for feedback by next Friday. Yes, Sean?
So just to be clear, in terms of narrowing the net, we're just talking about excluding Tony Owen from that list of people that we're going to cast the net at?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
So I'm going to do three that I'm aware of and see what happens with that. SDAO has a consulting arm for which they do have contract people that come in, and I hope that one call to them will take care of that. A call to Jason Green's organization and a call to Profman, who is familiar with applicants and people that may be in between jobs that might have a temporary option. And looking to those three at this point, unless someone else has got another suggestion.
I think that's going to cover a wide area for different groups. I really do. It's going to be a broad spectrum.
We'll give it a try.
Yep, that's all we can do. That's all I can ask.
All right. Moving forward then. Wait a minute. Before we go there, it seemed like there was consensus to clarify a board member to be liaison with between staff and the board, and it would be my recommendation that be Vice Chair Price at this point. Is there any feedback or comments from the board on that? Tom?
I think that's a good choice.
Don?
I concur.
Cameron?
Give it a shot, Ann.
Ann, will you accept?
I will accept if they will accept me as the liaison. Michelle and everybody else.
I got bandages. Artery stoppers.
Yes, I accept.
Thank you. So at this point, then, I will limit my conversation with staff regarding I will act as I have as board chair, which means that I don't call staff for miscellaneous things. If I need to talk to staff individually, I will go through Ann. Ann will be the liaison at this point for staff to board, and we will move forward. I think the exception might be if I need something from staff on regards to the items that are on today's agenda, excluding the AMR project and the Horn Creek project. That comes under operations, and that'll be yours. John?
I'd just like to say on the record that, especially in light of where we are now, that I want to make it clear that if staff does have concerns over anything, that I want to hear about it, I think the board would like to hear about it, and I think it would be fantastic if the staff had concerns, if they would bring those concerns to hand.
Agreed.
Yeah, I agree with that. And if they have any problems with Ann, but some people don't, some people do, it doesn't matter. As long as they contact and get in touch with us and let us know what's going on. And if something goes on, I hope that Ann will bring it to the attention of the board. You know, if we really have a real bleeding problem or a fleshing problem, yeah, I'd really like to know.
All the policies that have been in place will be followed. If there is any disruption in service, any blip in operations, the full board does get that notice and that information. In terms of staff having minor issues, those are not to come to the individual board members. That's not what this is about. This is about if there's a major issue where an employee does not feel like they can communicate with Ann, they're welcome to go to another board member. But on the day-to-day operations, Ann is our liaison.
Great.
Now,
all right. Thank you,
Michelle,
Ann.
And Rochelle, we'll work through that together. So.
All right. Item 7, authority manager search. As requested, I had a conversation with Bill McDonald from Prothman yesterday or the day before yesterday. He was disappointed to hear that our authority manager is no longer with us. He has said we need to make that right. He stated that we are outside of our previous contract with them by about 3 months. And he would see, he would talk with the head of that organization and find out if there would be any discount that they could give us if we chose to move forward with them again. I did get information this morning that they would like to work with us. They are very open to what our concerns are and how we might improve the process. And they have discounted their fee by, I think it's $3,000 with going forward, and they would give us another year guarantee on the position.
So did we get a permanent customer break on that?
Not at this point. We would have had a preferred, customer break if we had used them within a certain time frame for the assistant authority manager.
Oh.
But at this point, there is not a preferred break.
Now,
go ahead.
Will Bill handle it if we do go through it with it next time, since he knows our layout?
Yes, Bill said he would personally handle the process again. He would look forward to working with us. He would give us his full support and then some.
All right.
Good news.
So would the board like me to contact Prothman and say that we are ready to move forward?
Yes.
And we'll need to review our documents to see if they're up to date and make sure that they're ready to go out before posting can be made. But since we've already written that documentation, that once we're under contract, I would suspect that it may only be weeks before we see that posting go up.
The only thing I'd like to see is maybe some of our questions are going to have to change.
On the interview process?
Correct.
Okay. John? We can't hear you.
Sorry, let me know if that goes, if my internet goes out. That was me, but let me know if the internet goes out because I'm reviewing multiple windows at once. So I very much am okay with moving forward with Prothman. I concur with Cameron. I think we're going to need to change up some of the questions. I think we're going to have to, it would be my preference to change some of the, of what we do in this process. I think we may have to change the scope of work a little bit. So I'm a little apprehensive about jumping in too far into this until we have that meeting with Ryan Fleming in terms of an HR assessment, because I think that's my hope, is that the feedback that we get from an HR assessment might inform what we are looking for in an authority manager. And so I would be apprehensive about putting forth a posting prior to getting that process with Ryan Fleming accomplished. And just to throw it out there, I have some concerns about how we would go through this process in the COVID era. I cannot imagine going through a recruitment process over blue jeans.
Yes.
Yeah.
I concur. It's going to be interesting, but things are lessening up. Gilmer County's getting better. Once again, that brings us back to our community center and that sort of thing. But as far as meetings, however, the one thing I noticed over the last process that concerned me was one of the things that Prothman did recommend was have a community meeting with like the last two or three finalists, and so that folks in the community can contact or ask questions. And that wasn't included in our last process, and I think that's important for transparency, especially now since we've got these problems. And transparency should be really key to our constituents. So I would recommend that we make sure that we do have a community meeting with our constituents when we finally come to that point.
All right, Sean?
Yeah, so I have concerns about that, Tom, and I hear what you're saying, and I understand where it's coming from. But as somebody who's hired people before and as somebody who has looked for jobs before, if I knew that I was going to have to be one of three finalists going in front of the community for a job that I was looking for, I wouldn't apply for it. I mean, there's some confidentiality involved, I think. If we want to get the broadest group of applicants that we can, I think we have to protect their confidentiality. So we might get people applying from places where they don't want their employers to know that they're applying.
I get your point.
Okay, thank you. Ann? As I recall, and the older I get, the shorter my memory is, but as I recall, we did have citizen at-large members of our interview team, and that was largely directed at that very issue, was to have people in the community who could sit in on the process to satisfy that aspect of review by other people than just board members, and also to address and protect those confidentiality issues that Sean's bringing up. I think that was a very good and useful and informative piece of the process, because for all of us, we had people commenting in the interview process who were not involved day to day with the authority in the way staff is and the way board members are. So I would expect that would continue to be part of the process. And when we have our meeting with, is it Bill? Yeah. We can raise that issue and that concern. And in the meantime, we might all read, if we haven't yet, reread this information that we got before. I suspect that we will receive an updated version of this packet directed at the at the upcoming search. So we'll have an opportunity to see all of that fleshed out.
Thank you. Tom? John, I take your point. And, you know, the more I think about it, I tend to agree with you. However, perhaps not in the interview process, but after the decision is made, using and suggesting, for example, of other community members being part of the interview process, after the decision's made, have a reception of some sort to introduce the new manager to the community.
Yeah, I think that's a great suggestion, and I agree. I think that we need to have, again, community members at large as part of the interview and selection process.
Yes, Cameron.
Yeah, I would like to see some other people maybe in on that. And yeah, there was something else, and I forgot what I was going to say.
Just like me, Cameron.
No, I got it. I snapped that one back. Reeled it in. Yeah, if we could, I'd like to go back. If we have any of the information that we gave to Brockman for the stuff, the old, whatever we sent out from Brockman, I'd like to review that and make some additions to it or revisions. Guy, because I think I shredded all that stuff when we hired the manager. So do we have any?
Yes, we have things. So let me see if I can, let me comment and then let me summarize.
Okay.
One of the things that I would like to see different in this interview process is we included staff in the interview process last time, and that made an awful big group interviewing potential applicants. I would like to see us have so that we have a majority operations staff that is interviewing our potential applicants in terms of their abilities or their experience in running like plants, with some questions, at least with one board member there, if not two, but to get additional input from our staff on our applicants. And I'd like to see us have more of a role in the questions that are asked and make them more specific for our situation here. All of those things can be discussed and can be worked with as we go through this process. So in summary, go ahead, Sean.
Sorry, I just wanted to ask a clarification on that. Are you talking about for the process of interviewing with Prothman, decreasing board members that would be a part of the process and increasing staff members?
Not at all.
Okay.
I'm talking about breaking it into groups so that the board and maybe a staff member and a couple of community members are doing interviews, but we also have a different interview process that's focused on operations that can pull out the experience of the applicants. I think that we weren't aware of some of the issues that last time around that we might have been able to catch in a better interview process. Sean, go ahead and respond to that, and then I'll go to Tom.
Okay, thanks. So, yeah, I think that kind of gets back to one of the comments that I made earlier, and that is, you know, maybe we're jumping the gun a little bit in terms of trying to move forward with posting a job opening and that sort of stuff, you know, and that to me kind of comes into this scope of work with Prothman. And, you know, I do agree with you. I think that there were perhaps some additional information that would have been helpful from an operations standpoint. But I wonder also how much of this is board expectations and was the board looking for something that was not completely in line with what the authority and the staff needed? And B, did we not adequately express our expectations of what we were interested in? And maybe some combination of Prothman and Ryan Fleming can help get us all in a better position around all those things. And so that's again kind of goes back to why I'm a little apprehensive about getting a posting out there right away is I think we need to bring all these things back in, make sure we have a better understanding of what the board is looking for, a better understanding of what our staff needs, and then that would, I think, inform the scope of work that we would move forward with Profman, getting it towards that next stage, which would be, you know, actually actively looking for an authority manager.
Then bringing it all together.
Tom?
Indeed.
Carolyn, I think that's an excellent idea. I kind of crossed my mind briefly during the last process, but you know, we are a very technical organization, and to have operations staff ask specific technical questions of a new candidate is, I think, has merit. So I really like that idea.
Don?
Just kind of as a for instance, because I just thought about this listening to you all, but you know, we had a point at which during the last process with Profman where the board was asked to submit questions that would then get asked of these candidates, and maybe we need to expand that scope to include our staff and ask them what kind of questions they would ask a candidate.
Exactly, and I hope you're writing all these pieces down so that we have them as we go through this process.
You bet.
One of the things that I would be personally interested in on a new authority manager has to do with our ORSs and contracts and other things like that, because that was a big hole for me on this last round. In terms of, I don't want to jump the gun on getting the position posted, but I do want to get in, if we're going to move forward with Profman, I do want to get under contract and get the preliminary started so that we don't get delayed a month when we are ready. I think it might be a good idea to ask Bill if he would join us at one of our meetings so that we can give him feedback about how we felt the process may have failed us, or that we failed the process, so that we don't repeat those same things going through it again. I wouldn't expect us at this point, I would think that we're at least a month out from actually getting the posting up, but we need to get into conversations in order to move the process forward. So I would, yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I think we missed a mark maybe. I think we're probably a half step above from last time, because actually I think we learned where we missed our mark on this. And I think looking at the posting and the questions and what we're looking for, I think we're going to nail it this time. I really do. I think we got a pretty good grasp on what we need and what we miss. So learn by our mistakes.
Ann, and then Sean.
I'm just wondering. It's sounding to me like we're all kind of pulling in the same direction here on the question of Profman. I'm wondering if we need to make a motion to pursue a contract with them, accepting their discounted price. I'm not sure how to say that appropriately, but we need to make a motion and vote on that, don't we?
We do. Let's get Sean's comment in here, and we can come back to that, Sean.
Sure, yeah, I would just reiterate that I think we're all kind of on the same page, and I'm 100% on board with moving forward with Profman, just as long as we're kind of all in agreement that we can't actually post anything or get to that point until we've had a conversation with Ryan Fleming, until we've had, you know, all these other things kind of come back together. But yes, I think that those tracks can be parallel to a point.
Yeah, yes.
Right.
So it sounds like that the board is on board with moving forward with a contract, a discounted contract with Profman, based on the fact that there will be no actual posting until, one, we've reviewed the data, and second, we all have had an opportunity to weigh in and say we're ready.
So moved.
I'm not sure the chair can make a...
No, you didn't make the motion. No. I did.
You did.
I just moved it.
Thank you.
the way you put that. And I assume this meeting is being recorded. Yes.
I will second that.
It has been moved and seconded that PCJWSA move forward with a discounted contract with Prothman and invite Bill McDonald to have a dialogue with us, and that we will review our documents that we have, and that we will not give support to actually posting until we have an opportunity to debrief on progress.
I second it.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Hey, Mark, how do you do that move and pasted motion? I like that.
What?
The move and pasted, you know, like you take it out of your text and stuff, move and paste motions.
This said so moved.
So moved. So I will, we will find the document that we posted last time and get that all to you to review. And I will move forward with getting the contract in place and seeing when Bill can join us via Blue Jeans.
I know. So we'll be here hearing for next week's meetings and me being.
Yes. Okay. And are there dates and times that is 3 o'clock a good time and is Thursday a good day?
I'm free all week.
John?
John?
I'm not free on Monday.
Yep.
And generally speaking, earlier in the day is better for me. We had kind of today was and last week were kind of some specialties, but generally speaking, mornings are better for me just because we're not open, so that makes it easier.
Next week, is anybody not available in the morning? Toward the end of the week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. That all looks good to me. If you could hold Wednesday, Thursday, Friday a.m. on your calendar, I'll see what I can do tomorrow to contact people and pull things together.
Great.
Not before 9 o'clock, please.
All right.
Or maybe 10.
We'll try to do it on a rainy day, too. Any other final comments?
Good job, everybody.
Oh. Yeah, I do have one more thing that I'd like to talk about. I just wasn't quite sure where to put this in. I think it relates kind of to all of the agenda items, but I just wanted to wait till the end to put this in. I think it's important, and I don't know what the right mechanism for this is, whether it's just letting the board know or if it gets run through Ann or through Carolyn. Can you all hear me okay? Some of you are freezing.
Yes.
Okay. You know, Oregon OSHA has an interim COVID requirement and rule. There are three components of that I think are really important that the board is aware of. One is an exposure risk assessment. One is an infection control plan. And then employee training. I think it's imperative that the board is aware of whether or not there was an exposure risk assessment done, when it was done, if we have an infection control plan, if employees went through the training, and when all this stuff happened.
Sean, just to save a little bit of time, if you have a link to that page that outlines that, could you shoot that to me?
Yes.
Thank you.
Michelle, do you want to pipe up and then Michelle?
No, I was just trying to get your attention.
Yeah, do you want me to send you a copy of our plan that Mr. Medina put together?
You're at the point.
Sorry, would you like me to send you a copy of the plan that we already have?
You're echoing.
I don't know how to make it not echo. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Better?
No.
Maybe we need to have a conversation about internet speeds at the office too, huh?
Michelle, do you know what she was trying to say or going to say?
No, not all of it, but I do think that we do have protocol, we do have a plan, we have intervention. Are you going to put it up there?
What does it say?
We have a plan, yes, we know we have a plan. We have a definite plan. If anybody is sick, we have the protocol, we have what we're going to do. And staff is already aware of all that. We have been talked to many times. However, I don't know about Leonard this earlier tonight, but that was cute. But he wanted to be heard. So, yes, we do have a plan. We do know protocol. I don't know if it's everything you've asked for, Kirk. Yes, it is. Yes, it is, Rochelle says.
Do we have a written plan? I mean, and has it been documented? Because I know it was not required for companies with less than 10 employees.
Yes.
But we do have a written. Okay. Can you send that to the board?
Yes.
Awesome. Thank you.
So we're covered. I may have been working
all right
on that day.
Yes. We'll have Ann follow up on that. And if there's any questions, I'm sure she'll get to staff and back to the board. But yes, thank you for bringing that up, Sean.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rochelle.
Any other questions? All right, it is 5:08 and we are adjourned.